Well, my next guest will be at LitFest in Printers Row this weekend. Chicagoan Nicole Hollander has written several books in her illustrious career, but she's most known for creating the cartoon strip Sylvia. Sylvia ran from 1981 to 2012 in newspapers across the country. All told, the iconic character lived 33 years. She was created by Hollander, and the early inspiration for the character were based on her own life experience growing up on the west side of Chicago in the 40s and 50s. She chronicles that experience in her new memoir, We Ate Wonder Bread. It's her own story about growing up on West Congress Boulevard, which now is, well, an expressway. Mm-hmm. Nicole Hollander is going to be in conversation with June Hewitt on Saturday at noon at the Harold Washington Library as part of LitFest. And it's my pleasure to welcome her to the big table tonight. Nicole Hollander, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. So you have done so much in your life, and there's so much to talk about tonight. But why a graphic memoir? Why tell your story now?
Well, here I've had Sylvia's company for 35 years, and she's gone. And here I am. What am I going to do? So I went to a center for seniors, and I exercised, and I thought, this is not going to be my life. I'm not going to do this. And June and I will talk about that at Printers Row, because we met there, and we started writing together, and we discovered that we had a lot in common, even though she was a Pentecostal and I was a Jew, but somehow we seemed to overcome. We wanted to write a book that was called A Jew and a Pentecostal Walk into a Bar, but we couldn't think of the next thing we would say about it.
You got the cover, but that's about it,
cover,
right?
Yeah, I got the cover, graphic memoirs. I mean, when I was in college, I was in love with German Expressionism, so it would not be so easy for me to switch to a style which was very tight and orderly. So I had to do something that looked more like a sketchbook.
Right.
And that's what I did. I was fortunate to get a couple of weeks at Ragdale.
And a great writing retreat.
Yeah, a great retreat in Lake Forest. And they took me into this incredible studio. There was enormous, enormous walls and high, and looked out onto the prairie. And before I came, I had gone to an art supply store, and I said, I want some really good, really big paper. And the guy that was there said, you can only buy this kind of paper. So I was more obedient than I have ever been in my life. And I bought this wonderful paper, and it was in rolls. And I went into the studio, and I had a stapler, and I just stapled these long rolls across the wall. And what was really wonderful and freeing about that was that I decided I would just write and draw at the same time. And if I didn't like something that I wrote and draw, I would just scratch it out. There would be no neat erasing. There would just be scratching out and putting something right over it.
It is so authentic when you look at the drawings, and they will be drawings of your living room, which is also your bedroom, and other places of the experience of growing up in this house on the west side of Chicago. You do get the feel from it that this is from your hand in the moment, because it is, as you just mentioned, it is a little bit outside the lines. It is a little bit.
Yes, it's a little outside.
Yeah, but in a good way, in the way that this is, you could tell this is almost, in a way, you're sketching your memories.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. Well, of course, you don't know that you live in an unusual neighborhood. That's just your neighborhood. Those are just the people you know. Everybody who had kids, the kids slept in the dining room. You know, this was not an odd thing. It was not an odd thing for mattresses to come with bed bugs. This was not, you know.
Right.
You know, and I fantasized that, you know, I was such an adventurer that I attached, you know, little carts and string to them and had races. But, you know, in fact, it just was not something that people worried about. There were a lot of things that people did not worry about.
You know, because you could do a graphic memoir about your entire life. I mean, I think there are your fans and people in your life would want to know all about what it was like to to write the Sylvia strip, to all the other works that you've done over the years. But specifically, this book is about growing up on the west side of Chicago and the house and the characters that were your family and friends and neighbors, and almost goes chapter by chapter explaining who they are. Talk about why you did it that way, this idea of a very particular place and time in your life.
Well, when I think of growing up, that is the place that I grew up. And it was much smaller than I thought it was. It was just really one building. It was like one Jewish building in the neighborhood, and I thought it was the entire world. And the people who lived in the front part of the building, they had money, and they had blonde furniture. That was the difference. And we were in the courtyard, and we had everything that was, you know, used, and we had, you know, one painting. It was of a ship on rough seas, and I thought, why did my family think that would be would show what we really wanted, what we were? What was wonderful about the neighborhood, there were tiny stores.
And this is for people who remember back to the 40s and 50s. This is the west side of Chicago. This is Congress and
Springfield, and Pulaski.
Congress and Pulaski, Adams and Pulaski, area. The book essentially goes through the building that you lived in. It's in a courtyard building, so mm-hmm. it's not just family and even friends that come over, your mom's friends that would be at the table, but it's also some of the people in the building you didn't know as well, or people that you're fondly remembering. I'm thinking of I think it was Harry the mobster in the building.
Yes,
but this was, talk about what you remember about the neighborhood, the west side, that particular area at Adams and Pulaski in the 40s.
I think that there was very little fear about going anywhere or doing anything. I think a lot of people slept in the park because there was no air conditioning. Right. Of course, you know, the kids wouldn't do that, but the fathers would do that. And I don't think we were afraid of anybody. And that seems odd to me that, you know, as a girl, I would go on the bus and... Should I say this terrible thing? That this bus was full of perverts. I mean, the bus would start going and guys would start going, you know, and you'd give them a dirty look. But you weren't afraid of them. And
that was the price of living in the city.
Exactly.
Right.
And my father never thought a thing about it. I mean, I think what he worried about was when I grew up, you know, what would I do? What would I do to make him crazy? So,
well, the characters, of course, in the book are strangers and people in the building and friends, but family plays a big role. Let's talk about your mom, who held court, if you will, and the table, and she had her friends. I wrote down her friends were Shirley, Esther, and Olga.
Yeah, she was Shirley.
She was Shirley, so Esther and Olga. But they would have these diss sessions.
Yes.
What are these?
Well... You know, no one was quite as good as they were, but I think it really was, thank you, that they liked to use their language, and they liked to kid around. My mother was very, very quick. My mother was unable to tell a complete joke because she got into the first line and the first situation, and she forgot everything, and she was finished. And other people were much better than her at this. But they met each other when they had a job. I was in a cab tonight. A guy was telling me that when he was a kid, he had all sorts of jobs, from finding bottles that he could bring in to parking cars at Wrigley Field. And that's what they did. So they went and they sold subscriptions, and they knew the same boys. They were in a social club. I guess guys had social clubs, and so they married these guys from a social club. And I think that the women were really, really fast talkers, and I think the men just let them. Hmm. You know, I think it was just like, let's relax, let the girls just talk. I mean, I felt like I didn't hear a guy say something from one year, you know, to the next year. My father was the only talker.
Well, I want to get to your father. We'll take a break before we get there. But it is funny. The diss sessions are just the three of them around the table talking yes. smack about everybody else in the neighborhood. And that sounds so familiar.
To, yeah, does it to you too?
Yeah, to all families to have that moment, you know, where that seemed to be the entertainment instead of television.
Yeah.
The entertainment was to make comment on what was happening
yeah,
around
right.
you. Yeah. In studio tonight, Nicole Hollander. She's the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. Nicole, of course, the creator of the famed Sylvia cartoon strip, which ran from 1981 to 2012 in newspapers across the country. She lives in Chicago, and she is going to be in conversation with June Hewitt on Saturday at noon at the Harold Washington Library as part of LitFest in Printers Row. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll continue the conversation at the Big Table with Nicole Hollander. Stay with us. Also at LitFest this weekend, Nicole Hollander. She's the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. Nicole Hollander, that name sounds familiar because Nicole is the creator of the Sylvia cartoon strip, a strip that ran for 33 years. Amazing to think about that, and we're going to talk about that coming up here as we as Nicole's my guest on the Big Table tonight. But back to the book, a lot of the inspiration for Sylvia come from your family and come from the experiences you had in this house on the west side of Chicago. It goes chapter by chapter, and there's different people. And I want to talk about, before we get to the Sylvia part, talk about okay. your father. A real interesting character in the book with a lot of kind of, I don't want to say old world mentality, but a good example of he knows kids are going to be curious. So he says, well, give her alcohol early so she knows, so she doesn't become an alcoholic. That's just an example of...
Yes, that's one of his best theories.
So what was your dad like?
He was very quick on the trigger. He was easily angered, but he was also... He knew everything. You could just walk in and ask him any question, and he knew it. He knew the answer to it. My sister said that she would just use him that way. You know, she would just ask him anything she wanted to know. I was thinking about he really liked to make people sort of blow up or feel uneasy mm. or feel as if their feet were not quite steady under their body. He taught me things that I could just recite to people so that they would fall down. He told me very young what a capon was. He must have told me a lot of things, and I don't remember. It's only the capon that I could draw. You know, I drew this rooster.
A capon is a rooster, a city rooster, right?
He's a rooster. Really, is
who's castrated?
Made for? Yeah, he's castrated.
Yeah, right.
He's made for eating,
right?
Because castration makes him more tender.
Of
what
course.
An interesting idea.
What an interesting idea. But, you know, there's a great scene in the in the book about, you know, your dad being someone at a young age, he told you to be be proud of your body, to be proud, you know, have, and you took that literally.
Yes,
you
right.
Took a swimsuit, wore a swimsuit on the North Avenue bus, but there seems to be a lot in this character.
He didn't mean it. Okay.
He didn't mean it?
He didn't think I was really going to do it. He would not have said that. But anyway, he said it.
But there's a lot, it seems like there's a lot where he was well-meaning,
yes.
and the interpretation may have gone awry.
Yes, well, the reality of it went awry. He thought all these things, and he was fascinated by this idea that he would produce a daughter who was free and proud of herself. And when he actually saw me come off the bus in that tiny swimsuit, he didn't feel quite the same way about it. He was surprised.
He was surprised that yes. that was the interpretation. How, and I mentioned right before this, but you know, when you talk about the characters, the women who joined your mom at the table or your dad or your living situation, as you mentioned, you know, in the living room, which was also a bedroom, and that's what it was at the time. How do you think that all inspired you and informed you as a writer and as an artist to create Sylvia?
I think Sylvia is all about talking and talking, well, a lot of talking she does is to other women. it's that kind of intimacy where you have friends who you think can do no wrong. And I drew them, and really Sylvia is the one who's talking. What I miss about Sylvia is reading the newspaper and trying to find something to write about. And so that made me look at the newspaper every day.
It was a vessel, right?
And looking for something weird. The other thing was that I was totally isolated. I didn't work in this building in the Tribune. I worked at home all by myself. And when you do that, get the feeling that you are all alone and you're talking to maybe one other person and they understand you perfectly well and they forgive you for everything. But the real people who read the newspaper weren't always so kind about it.
Well, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I have really nasty letters from people who just got so angry at me over a misunderstanding. But here I was at home. I didn't know for a long time that they were angry because they had to write a letter. They had to put it in an envelope. They had to send it to the Tribune, and the Tribune had to send it to me. It was very distant. I feel very sorry for the people now who are right on the immediate effect of what their words have done or what their action, and people are after them and mean.
To see the characters that are portrayed in the book, and that is what I love about the book, is that you do see the same vibe and style because it's your drawings, and you see the same style that were in the Sylvia cartoon strips. Do the characters and the surroundings, not necessarily the material, because that's coming from the daily interpretation of what's in the news at the time, but those drawings and those feelings and those the visions you have for those characters, are they based on this house back in on the west side of Chicago?
I think so, and I think it's based on people's conversations. I was thinking about the first time, only one person had a television, and so we would go to a basement apartment that was my best friend's house, and her mother, she showed Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, and I had never seen anything like that in my life, and I couldn't wait to see it again and again. So humor was really very big, because humor was big with my mother. My father was the intellect, but my mother was funny. Hmm. She would just respond to something in a very easy way.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break so we can get to Pam's news, mm-hmm. and we'll come back and we'll talk more about Sylvia and 33 years and all about what it takes to put that character together and to have it thrive and also to retire that character. Nicole Hollander is in studio. The new book is We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. Nicole, of course, the author of the Sylvia cartoon strip, which ran for 33 years, almost all those years in the Chicago Tribune here in Chicago. She's going to be in conversation with June Hewitt at the Harold Washington Library at noon on Saturday as part of Lit Fest, and she's my guest tonight at the big table. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us. Thanks, Pam. It's Download 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman in studio tonight, my guest at the big table. I'm very excited to have Nicole Hollander. She's the author of We Ate Wonder Bread, graphic memoir, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. Nicole Hollander, the creator of the Sylvia cartoon strip, which ran from 1981 to 2012, 33 years.
And she never stood up.
She never stood up.
We have no idea how tall. I think of her as a tall woman.
Well, it ran here at the Chicago Tribune, and I, you know, we're this book and a lot of the fun of reading this book about your eccentric building and your childhood on the west side of Chicago is trying to find the inspiration for what we know to be the character Sylvia, and you kind of talk about that in different places. But where does Sylvia come from? This idea of creating a character to be in a cartoon strip. How do we get there?
And someone who talks back. I mean, if you think about what women were like, She was pretty much different. I mean, can you think of another woman in a cartoon? Maybe Broomhilda, but Brenda Starr, who is a wonderful woman, but no one talked back. Kathy was pretty much absorbed with dating. So she was a feminist,
yeah,
immediately. I mean, when feminism came, I put it in the strip.
In 1981, to bring that element to the funny pages, was there pushback? I mean, was this idea that there was a set understanding of what the jokes were in the cartoons of a newspaper? Was there pushback for more feminist idea?
I think you know, the pushback comes with people who get angry, and you know, like, some man decided that I was dissing marching bands. You know, I don't know on what basis, but this is that people get an idea that you're doing something to hurt something that they
like,
really,
yeah,
care about.
Right.
And then I think that there's still a feeling that women shouldn't be funny. You know, I mean, they've got everything else. They can have babies. They attract men. Why should they think that they're funny? And who told them they could be funny? This man wrote to me and he said, I hate your strip. Okay. I said, you know, it's really tiny. You could just skip it and look at the next thing. And I was being light.
Right.
I never did that again, because he was not in a good mood. He said, your strip is like looking at a leper. He said, you want to take your eyes away from it, but you can't. And so I never wrote to anyone and said, skip it. That's
it. Well, it's so funny to hear you say this and bring it up again, because we live in a world now in 2018, even this program, you can text me like that. You can go on a Facebook page. You can go on Twitter. You can do 140 characters of how much you could spew as much hate as,
yes,
you like,
right,
at whatever creator there is. And that's acceptable. That's an acceptable form right now in our society. So to hear you talking about letters that you received, what, just 25 years ago,
yeah,
30
right,
years ago, and you can read those letters. It had an impact on you.
Yeah. And I think people spent a lot of time thinking how they could hurt someone in a really clever way. Often they would compare me to cartoonists who they knew I admired. And they would say, you're no Linda Barry. You're no Matt Groening. You're no, you know. I was thinking about the comedies where, remember the one where there's a closet, there's Fred Allen, and his wife says, Fred, don't open the closet door, you know, but you do. Those were the very, no one got angry at that kind of thing.
Okay, well, absolutely, there's going to be people who are going to write creative,
yeah,
hateful letters. That's the art of that has been around as long as time. I'm interested, though, in the, I mean, you can say, you know, you can reference back to all these different people who might have written letters, but there also was a huge rabid following for Sylvia. The column, or the cartoon did gangbusters. It lasted 33 years. I mean, it was a staple.
I mean, there was a group who really wanted to keep Sylvia going, and and I don't know, it's a certain time period. There are people who were children then. They were teenagers then. And this last year, I've met them. And they say, you know, my brother and I, you know, we didn't know what Sylvia was, but we liked it and we wanted to see it. And five, you know, I think if there were five people who came up to me and said, we really liked Sylvia, although we didn't know whether it was a comic strip or what it was.
Who was Sylvia for? Who was the demographic? Who's the key? Who, when you're writing Sylvia, who do you think the market or the target audience is?
I think of it as being women my age, as being for me. God, we are very inward, the cartoonists, you know. Yeah, I think that, and evidently it's also for younger people who looked at this and thought, I've never heard anybody say this in this particular way, and they wanted to see it again. And I hope that it made them political. I hope it made them care.
Yeah. It is interesting because there was a time in my life where if there was a newspaper in the room, I would, as a kid or a young teenager, would run to the funny pages. That was going to be the way that I would connect to the day's news. Then there's a big swath, and I'll be honest with you, and said this in the 20s and 30s, that I did not ever look at the funny. Yeah. That was the skip of the newspaper to get to the next section. But I think of my grandfather, and I think of others in my family who were rabid newspaper consumers, and they were into the funny pages. So there is this way that on both ideas, this mm-hmm. idea of being 9 years old and maybe being 70 years old, that there was a shared experience.
Yeah, yeah. I was also thinking how much newspapers meant to people. Because I don't see this so much anymore. That my father and his friends would go to a deli, and they would have coffee, and they would be reading their newspaper. So it was a kind of compatible space. They were each in their own zone, but they were still together and compatible.
Yeah, it was a way to relate. Not to dwell on the end, but in 2011 or so, the Tribune decides to drop the cartoon, and was it maybe a year later you decided to stop altogether, retire the character?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I really can't remember whether they decided to drop the strips or I felt that there was something changing, and I didn't see how I would belong. It starts with your editor. You know, you have an editor who's so in tune with you and can really criticize your work and see it and talk to you about it. And then the next editor leaves because she wants to teach yoga. And then the next editor thinks you write too much. So you do see a change, and you say, perhaps it's time to go.
How difficult was it, not just to obviously exit the spotlight and, you know, the idea that you were syndicated in hundreds of newspapers around the country, but to retire the character, to say, it's one thing to say, I'm not going to do this strip in the Chicago Tribune, but it's another to say, all right, this character has run its course. It's time to put it to bed. How hard was that?
I think I never thought of it that way because the humor is the same. And so I never thought I'm putting Sylvia to sleep. It's like putting an animal to sleep. Poor thing, she didn't know it was coming. I guess not. I felt that she was still going on. And when I talk about meeting June at the center, and we started writing and performing pieces together, there's that same sensibility.
The same humor, yeah. Right. That lives on.
Yeah, it does, and I'm...
Do you get emotional about Sylvia? Do you get emotional about the 33 years of the cartoon strip? Do you get emotional about retiring the character?
I am not emotional about it. No, it still gives me a laugh. I look at it. I'm so glad I did it because how many people have a chance to do this? I mean, I cannot whine about this. This was a wonderful time, and it didn't matter how long it lasted. It lasted long enough, I think.
The book, We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago, it is this entree back into the world of publishing and drawing, and there is a lot in here that is very similar to Sylvia and the style and the humor and everything that you just mentioned lives on. Do you see it that way? Do you see that this this memoir that really pays tribute to your life in this one building on, you know, West Congress in the 40s and 50s, do you see it as paying homage? Do you see it as an extension of Sylvia and the work that you've done in the past?
I really do, because I see her as one of those women, and so that really doesn't change. She appears in other women in that building, in the way they talk together. Yeah, I just feel happy that I had the opportunity to do it. And you don't say to yourself, oh, it's over now. You say, what am I going to do next? I mean, you may say it with a little bit of fear. What will I do next? Because I'm not going to study higher math. I am not going to play the piano. So what will I do next?
Well, we look forward to what's next. How about that? Nicole Hollander is my guest. Her graphic memoir is We Ate Wonder Bread, a memoir of growing up on the west side of Chicago. She is going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest this weekend in conversation with June Hewitt on Saturday at noon at the Harold Washington Library. Like I said, part of Lit Fest. A pleasure to meet you, Chicagoan. Congrats on the book, and we look forward to the conversation on Saturday.
Thank you so much.